Hello again to the Week in Blog. Con Carroll, this is his week off. He's had hard duty last few weeks going up against Matt Stoller and John Amato. So he deserves a respite. Another Bill is joining me. Why don't you introduce yourself again to the Blogging Heads fan base out there?
Sure. Thank you, Bill. I'm William Butler on First Reference and then also Bill thereafter. I work at New Media Strategies, is an online PR, marketing, and all kinds of things firm in Washington, D.C. I write a blog at blogpi.net, and you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/WilliamButler. That's my best intro so far, I think. The smoothest.
Excellent. So and just in case people have forgotten, because I've been away for a few weeks, Bill Scheer, Campaign for America's Future, and liberaloasis.com. I also Twitter, but I don't really know why anyone would follow what
it's
Bill Scheer. I have to say there.
Twitter.com/Bill Scheer.
You can read about what I eat for lunch. That's my Twitter niche. So the biggest thing I would say in the blogosphere this week was in the conservative blogosphere.
For once, actually.
What's that?
I say for once. Usually it's a little quieter.
In conjunction with what was going on the House floor with some of the conservative House members, and this is the Don't Go movement. Do right. I say number sign Don't Go movement? Is there some proper way to describe this?
Yes, the term you're looking for is a hashtag. It's a pound sign or a hash mark. I think the actual, you know, here I'm approximately making the shape with my fingers in front of the camera. You know, it's the pound sign from the phone, basically.
So would I say hash don't go? Would I say pound don't go?
That's a great question. I think people call it the don't go hashtag. That's what they would call it.
Gotcha. So what was the basis of this? How did this come about? What was the objective of it, and how effective has it been?
Okay, that's a tall order. Let's see what I can do here. Let me first back up and explain for our readers who are maybe not quite as Twitter savvy. I meet people that don't know what Twitter is, and for a moment I'm a little surprised just because of the world that I travel in. Everybody I know is either a blogger or has something to do with the internet. But, you know, for the most part, it's still used by a very small select group of people, tend to be young, tend to be tech savvy. So Twitter.com, you know, it's a microblogging service. You can use it to message people. People follow you. It's kind of like advanced IM, advanced text messages. And the hashtags specifically, if you are talking about a particular subject that other people you think are talking about as well, then you can create a little symbol, a little code that, well, you drop that into your tweet. That's what you call a little Twitter message. And that will basically, you can search again, you can search that. So if you go to search.twitter.com and you type in pound sign don't go, you will find all of the bloggers who are using that particular phrase.
And so if you want to find all those tweets, all those messages, do you have to go to, so there was a website created, don'tgo.us. Do I have to go there to read all those messages?
You don't. They're not there, as far as I'm aware. There's actually more than one Don't Go website, which I want to get to a little bit later. But the best thing to do if you do want to read what people are saying about it is go to search.twitter.com and type in pound sign don't go, and you'll come up with I ran a search using a graphing tool for Twitter for tweets, I suppose, earlier today, and over the past few days there have been definitely more than 500, and I didn't get an exact number off it, but more than 500 tweets in the past, since Friday, basically, about Don't Go. And Friday wasn't even the biggest day. It picked up more steam over the weekend. So,
and where did the name Don't Go come from? What was it meant to convey?
What Don't Go means to convey is, well, this is where we should explain what happened on the House floor last Friday. It was about to be recess. The Democrats were ready to get out of town. The Republicans had badly wanted to get a vote on energy legislation, but Pelosi and the Democrats were not as keen on the legislation as the Republicans were, as in they didn't want to pass it. And so they left, and the Republicans stayed on the floor even after the lights were turned out, albeit briefly. The C-SPAN cameras went off as well, so you wouldn't be able to see it on C-SPAN. That is not Brian Lamb's fault, but that is because C-SPAN does not control the cameras that are in at least the House chamber. That might be different from the Senate, but I'm not sure. And the only way you could actually see it was online. Was John Culberson is a representative from Texas who has made a name for himself over the past few weeks, past maybe a few months by now, as a big user of Twitter, as a big user of a service called Quick, that's QIK.com, which lets you use a flip camera and record yourself and stream that live over the internet. That's what Quick.com is. And I mean, there's even more backstory to this if we want to delve into the franking rules, where Michael Capuano, who was a representative from Massachusetts, sought to, and I'm a little hazy in the details about whether he was setting up new rules or trying to enforce rules that had been ignored, but using the franking rules to try to tell congressmen that they were not exactly encouraged to be using things like Twitter because they weren't they were not officially approved. Of course, the rules were written long before such a thing as Twitter came into existence, before blogs came into existence. And I know people that have worked on the Hill and have had a heck of a time trying to get a blog set up. The House leadership can do it, so the House leadership would also be able to use the Twitter, but they were trying to tell rank-and-file members they couldn't use it. Just as on the Senate side, it's even worse. John Hankey.
So what were the House members trying to accomplish by using Twitter on the floor?
The same thing that they've been trying to use blogs for over the past few years, and that is to get around the filter of the media. In this case, the C-SPAN cameras were turned off entirely. So if anybody was going to hear about what they were doing, it was all going to have to be done by themselves electronically via Twitter, via Quick, and, of course, via email and blogs as well. But Twitter and Quick have an immediacy that even blogs don't have. And I've seen people writing about how we're even entering a post-blog world, which I'm not sure that I buy that. That
blogging era is so old.
It's
so outdated.
It's so slow. You know, everything is everything is speeding up. That's what everybody's been saying since probably long before we were born. But, you know, obviously it is true that attention spans get shorter because we are able to communicate faster. Certainly, Mickey Kouse, one of the co-founders of Blogging Heads, has a great little theory, the filer faster thesis, or maybe it's a theory still. I'm not sure if he's proved it exactly. But not only are things speeding up, is communication speeding up, but people's ability to process it as well is speeding up. And that's how you can have a movement like Don't Go launched basically over the weekend.
So though the conservative House members, they're not still Twittering inside the Capitol.
I was out on Friday night. I finally went to go see The Dark Knight Returns, and so I didn't find out about this until I got back later in the evening. So I assume they were tweeting, but I can't tell you for certain that they were. But
this week they haven't as much. I thought the actual House floor revolt thing had sort of petered out.
Well, part of this now is the after Friday. The members of the House, the Republican caucus, for the most part, also, you know, got out of town as well. So Don't Go. It was trying to. Okay, maybe this is a good point to mention the fact, as I did earlier, or go into the fact that there are four different websites right now that have to do with Don't Go. There's don'tgo.us, and that was the first one, and that's the one that is the most closely tied to the hashtag.
That's where you can see all the tweets in one place.
Can you? I when I was there earlier today, it was
or at least
like
the top,
the
most recent 20 or something.
Okay, that might be that for sure. There's also don'tgomovement.com, and then getting back to what you were saying about Republican revolt petering out. There's also a website called callbackcongress.com. And then as of last night, there is a fourth one that is gotoworkcongress.com. So, yes, they're trying to call back the Republicans to then also call back the Democrats who are, for the most part, not coming back. Some Republicans are. I wish I had remembered which name I saw was coming back to town, but probably more than one of them are. And this is, you know, it's maybe
so
the first time.
So am I mistaken? Are they still going to the House every day and tweeting up a storm, even though there are no cameras there? Is that still going on?
I don't believe so. I don't believe they are in the House right now, but I
reserve. So what's happening on with Don't Go and the actual Twittering if the Congress people themselves aren't still doing that?
Remember, this thing started on, the Twitter that the Republicans revolt started Friday. Don't Go picked up over the weekend. And so at this moment in time, I believe you have a few members of the Republican caucus who are coming back to D.C. to resume the fight. And I don't know how many, and we won't, probably when this thing is up by tomorrow, we'll have a better idea. But now that the Congress is closed for the, for the recess, I don't really know that they can get it set up that way. I think they'll probably focus their efforts on the media rather than necessarily going to the House floor. But I'm certainly no expert on congressional procedures, so I reserve the right to be a little ignorant about that.
So I guess the big question is this the dawn of a new age of Twitter politics, a new way to organize that's even better than blog politics? And your next right colleague, Patrick Ruffini, he had a post up saying, elected officials cannot start movements on their own. They need a willing audience to activate. The audience was primed by John Culberson leading the revolt against the ridiculous House franking rules. On the issue side, it was primed by Newt's Drill Now movement. That solidified Culberson and, by extension, minority Republicans as the troublemakers storming the gates with technology and Democrats as the lame defenders of an old order. That is the natural role of any political minority, but one House Republicans accustomed to the majority have been uncomfortable embracing until now. I was around the blogosphere in 2002 and 2003. There are roughly equal numbers of conservative and liberal bloggers then, but liberals were using the blogosphere for the right things, changing the political system rather than commenting on it, because their projects seemed more necessary and central to the Democratic coalition. They attracted most of the new growth up to 2006. He continues, Don't Go is creating a perfect storm where the emergence of a new technology is married to a pressing need to do something. Republicans had the use of the tools down, but had no pressing to-dos in the early 2000s. As Matt Stoller reminded me in a great radio appearance earlier, Democrats had impeachment, the recount, and the Iraq War. We had to defend all these things, and online it's a lot easier to be on offense than on defense. Jane Hampshire over at Fire Dog Lake challenged that post, and she said, now the right roots folks are trying to play catch up with the Don't Go movement, and while I think Patrick is probably right that it's easier to play offense than defense, the idea that this was spawned as some sort of grassroots uprising is kind of a joke. The Republicans in the House are pulling a pretty thin stunt in demanding the Democrats not go on August recess until a solution is found to the energy crisis, and John McCain is applauding them. In theory, that's great. We have a huge energy problem in this country that definitely needs dealing with, have had for decades. But to pretend that their proffered solution, more drilling, is not one that was drafted by the oil companies, supported with huge marketing budgets and enormous campaign donations, is pathetic. Newt Gingrich is leading the charge, for Christ's sakes. The whole thing is just more of the right roots acting as an echo chamber for their party's corporate overlords, top-down messaging and extremists, no matter how many tweets you generate. Now, that kind of gets to the organicness of the Don't Go movement, and perhaps that's a separate question specific to Don't Go, as opposed to the question, is Twitter politics a new phase we're entering in? But I'll put the ball in your court. Which one of the two you want to address first?
Whether Twitter politics is a new phase coming up, or what was the other one exactly?
Is Don't Go nothing remotely, not remotely anything grassroots oriented, but just an extension of a top-down corporate strategy for more drilling?
Oh, okay. Well, I can take both. I'll take the first one quickly. I certainly have seen no evidence of there being any involvement by ExxonMobil or Shell or BP. That sounds like, lefty blogosphere paranoia about who's really... Somebody must be pulling the strings of the Republican blogosphere. Otherwise, they wouldn't be saying these crazy things. So I think Jane Hampshire is getting a little bit ahead of herself on that.
I'm mocking you visually, by the way. I don't mean it personally.
Oh, that's what we're here for.
I feel bad mocking when you can't see what I'm doing.
I'm going to find out in about 48 hours, I suppose. I'm actually sitting in front of a couple of movie posters here. I have the Da Vinci Code behind me and National Treasure, so maybe some conspiracy is going to envelop you as soon as I find out exactly what's going on.
I hope it doesn't reflect your actual movie tastes.
No, it reflects the company's actual movie clients. the future of politics on Twitter. You know, I think Twitter actually is very, very new, and people are still figuring out just how to use it. I do think it's going... Pardon me?
I'm still here.
Okay. I think that people are going to find more ways to use it over, you know, the coming years, and they already have. I think...
Has this worked? Has the drilling... agenda been mm-hmm. significantly advanced by Twittering, or did the Newt Gingrich petition, which was very much an online activity, although greatly enhanced with a lot of conservative talk radio?
Didn't Ruffini call it a perfect storm? I think it very much is.
Can you actually single out the Twitter part of it? Said this really helped move the ball in some way that these other communication mechanisms didn't.
Well, the one thing Twitter can do that a blog doesn't necessarily do. Is we're assuming that the member of Congress is actually in charge of their own Twitter account, which seems to be the key thing here, that some of them are, and that they can get messages directly from people who are following them on Twitter. Right now, Twitter is small enough that while you can't do one-to-one exactly, you can follow the messages more easily. And so somebody like Culberson or one of the many other House Republicans who are using Twitter, they are getting messages from people on Twitter all the time, in this case, you know, saying, please don't go, or please come back, please call the Democrats back, and, you know, let's get moving on some energy legislation. So, okay, as far as Twitter goes, you know, I'm not sure this is a movement per se. I would dial it back a little bit from what Ruffini is saying. Right now they have about 25,000 signatures, which is not too shabby. That's also a far cry from the, 1.2, 1.4 million that Newt's Drill Here, Drill Now organization has. So it is a start. It's certainly a positive sign for Republicans who have not really had something to rally around for a little while. And, I think the question about, you know, you were getting to this earlier or reading from what Ruffini said about how Democrats have been playing offense for the past few years and Republicans playing defense, that might be changing. And obviously, if Obama becomes president, it will be very interesting to see what happens when Republicans start going on offense. Democrats have to play defense. And, I'm not sure if you read the line from Ruffini's post there where he says, should we actually cede the blogosphere to the left? I think that might be overstating things, but to have a blogosphere that is then also has a Twitterverse, I think is a term people sometimes use, that kind of like ties blog posts together, helps promote things faster. That allows critical mass to be attained faster than in days of yore when people were just on these clunky old things called blogs. So it has certainly streamlined the communications process. And I think that's going to be one of its key contributions to politics over the next few years, obviously putting very interested constituents in closer contact with their members of Congress is another. Obviously, it depends on the member of Congress actually using it. So the fact that a number of Republicans, obviously, as you know, have this feeling that they're behind online. Twitter felt like something, I think, that they could jump onto that the Democrats hadn't gotten out first on. And so that probably explains partly why Republicans have, at least at the moment, a short lead on Twitter. Culberson is the member of Congress with the most tweets. Probably that, too. He's the member of Congress with the most followers at about 2,800, pushing 3,000. It's not huge. Is that a It's not a movement like Rush Limbaugh could corral. But all those people we're following are, you know, members of the class of voters and activists who really care, who, you know, follow politics and read blogs a lot. It's the influentials, is the term people like to use.
Is the intention here to make Don't Go into something like a Move On? Was the phrase even concocted as a flip side to Move On, the way Move On started as an anti-impeachment
right.
thing for Clinton that grew into something else?
I don't think so. I think just guessing here, I believe that the intention would be to flip that back to something like Drill Here, where Drill Here is already actually about the issue, and Don't Go is trying to be a catalyst to focus members of Congress back on the issue. Although, as I mentioned, there being four websites, we clearly have four websites that promote don'tgo.us. I believe at least a couple of them are collecting different signature petitions. We have a case here of, I believe, a lack of discipline from Republican Party activists, at least the online conservative activists, who, you know, you have the too many cooks. Everybody thinks it's a great idea, so everybody launches their own site. And that probably has an effect of diluting the message in the short term.
That's always the difficulty of online organizing.
Herding cats.
The upside of it is that anybody can do it, so it brings more people into the process. So the flip side is it's much harder to coordinate because anyone can do it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the blogosphere, you know, the blogosphere has been around for a while now, and it's very clear who the big personalities are. They obviously, people know who gets more traffic. There are leaders have emerged. Twitter is new enough and not yet based in politics enough for there to be real clear leaders, although somebody like Patrick Graffini is a great example. He has one of the biggest followings among political tweeters that I'm aware. I guess you can tell that Twitter is still new when even I kind of, you know, find myself feeling a little silly for using some of the words associated with it. Whereas blog, you know, hey, my grandma knows what a blog is. It's not new and interesting anymore.
Well, we've spent a good chunk of time on this, so I'm tempted. We're going to talk about tire gauge back and forth. I wonder if we should skip that and go beyond drilling.
Oh, sure. Not a problem. What would you like to go take this next?
Well, there was a lot of discussion, certainly on the left. I'm curious what you found on the right. Looking at the poll, there's been all sorts of blogs doing poll analysis, some making the case that, in sync with what you get from a lot of traditional media pundits, that Barack Obama is underperforming in the polls relative to how Democrats are doing generally. And there's been some contrarian poll analysis, from myself included, arguing otherwise, even saying that knowing that Obama is overperforming relative to John Kerry in a lot of key demographic groups and overall and the fact that he is winning in almost every single poll. So let me just...
Can you tell me, is that John Kerry how he did in the fall, or is that how he was doing at this point in the race in 2004?
Well, 538, which is a new blog that's come on the scene for his poll analysis.
The sabermetrics of political numbers.
Nate Silver runs that. He contrasted Barack Obama, I believe, from the Gallup tracking poll relative to how Kerry did in the final exit polls. And found that Obama was beating Kerry in every single demographic. That's gender, that's race, that's age, that's region, that's level of education, that's married or single. The only demographic that Obama was weaker than Kerry was amongst Democrats, which meant that Chris Bauer at Open Left had opined upon as well. But you had, just in the interest of trying to bring in some non-A-list bloggers, some of the Blogging Against commenters called us to task for, you know, being a little too overly reliant on a handful. Mm-hmm. There was one blog, The Left Anchor, that noted, even white voters look like they'll underperform for McCain this November. In 2004, George W. Bush secured this block with an impressive 17-point lead, but McCain currently leads here by only 7 points. I believe Mark Ambender over at the Atlantic blog also pointed out that he said that the white male gap is the gap, and McCain is underperforming. He's ahead, but not ahead by enough if he is to actually pull this out. Mm-hmm. Now, but you had over at your Dip Dive, which is where the Will I Am music videos of Obama have been aired initially. They actually have their own blog there. There's a guy there by the name of Hillel Aaron that talked about Democracy Corps has a poll asking who gives you a warm feeling or a cold feeling. Bush gets a 32% warm. Obama gets a 47% warm. McCain's a 43% warm. Mm-hmm. The Democratic Party is 42% warm. So there's a lot of talk about Brock underperforming Democrats in this poll. He's overperforming the Democratic Party in general as far as warm feelings are concerned, while McCain overperforms Bush, which also speaks to the fact that to the extent that the race is close.
Right?
What, I'm sorry?
Which is reflective of the fact that calling McCain McSame isn't working.
Well, you know, I wouldn't go that far. I actually think the McSame argument has gone a lot farther than I would have expected it to.
Okay.
You have seen, I think you have seen McCain weighed down to some degree, but there is that residual effect. McCain's longstanding strength amongst independents still is in play, and therefore he pulls better than Bush. Actually,
right.
and your point is well taken there. You know, it's not necessarily independents, but some more conservative leaning Democrats,
mm-hmm.
Where McCain has some strength. But in my own poll, my own analysis at Liberal mm-hmm. Oasis, and after this I'll shut up for a second. I won't get into every single blog post I have here. A lot of people are looking at Obama vis-a-vis generic congressional ballot, and you'll see Democrats, and this is something I had up on Liberal Oasis I didn't say before. You'll see Democrats having a 15-point lead versus Republicans or a 17-point lead. Sometimes it's more like 10 or 11, but typically double digits. And I think that's a little misleading because the level of support for Democrats is generally low 50s, and the Republicans will be in mid 30s. That's artificially low. I think that's a lot of disaffected conservatives staying in the undecided camp. They haven't really, really left the Republican Party. You'll see some base consolidation mm-hmm. by November.
I think Democrats usually tend to lead in terms of party ID anyway.
Well, and that was a point, that was also a Nate Silver point in LA Times op-ed, that there's usually weaker Democratic loyalty, relatively speaking.
Right.
But Obama generally polls in the upper 40s, occasionally breaks 50. So it's not a question of there being, Obama has a 5-point lead versus a 17-point generic ballot lead. It's a difference between being in the upper 40s for Obama and the lower 50s for Democrats generally. A mild discrepancy, but I think expected when you're an individual person who's a front runner who gets hammered on a daily basis the way that the party in general does not. Not mm-hmm. terribly surprising, and in the end, the guy's still ahead. So how upset can you be?
What are
conservatives saying about these poll dynamics in general?
You know, conservatives are not talking about it quite as much. Obviously, it's not, at least Obama is not their candidate, so they're not framing it that way.
But there's a sense that, hey, McCain's, you know, we didn't like McCain, but he sure is doing better than a lot of the other Republicans are.
You know, not to get too far off topic, but, you know, the past week, I think, and McCain did not come into the general election with a widespread base of real eager support from Republican bloggers. One of my favorite blogs this cycle is getdrunkandvoteformccain.com. It's kind of the John Kerry is a douchebag, but I'm voting for him anyway.com of this cycle. And so they're not really big John McCain fans. They are going to put up with him. I lost my train of thought real quick here. They're going to put up with him. Oh, okay. And then this last week, they've actually been impressed with him more than they had been, and that's a lot of that is the celeb ad, which probably that's way too much to get into here. But, you know,
conservative bloggers were excited by that. There were some dispersing reviews, even amongst Republicans who get quoted in the traditional media, more open dissent, mm-hmm. I think, than you had seen
most notably
from the Republican Party.
Most notably from Mike Murphy, who of course, was the main guy, McCain's right-hand man in 2000.
And John Weaver as well. These guys who feel like the McCain, who were once in McCain's circle now feel like the McCain image and brand is being sullied.
Yeah, and then they come from people who are, say, former Democrats like Mark McKinnon, who had been doing McCain's ads until it became clear that Obama had the nomination, and he stepped aside because he didn't want to be part of that. A little vague on that, and I'm surprised that hasn't been a bigger deal. But McKinnon
conservative
is,
bloggers have been generally supportive
of the celeb ad. Yes, I would say that the comments coming from certainly Murphy, Weaver, those are not at all reflected online. Republican bloggers are not too dissimilar from Democratic bloggers in the sense that they do like they like a bit of fight. And McCain, the line on McCain's campaign from about the time that he wrapped up the nomination until certainly when Obama got the nomination was that it was a wasted few months. He didn't really do anything. He tried to define himself positively, but, that didn't seem to do a whole lot. I think that McCain already has a lot of positives with the public, so that was kind of there wasn't a lot to be done there. But the celeb ad knocked Obama off his message for about a week and was quite successful in doing so. It got some lefty bloggers, Josh Marshall and Rick Perlstein, most notably, making some arguments that certainly Republican bloggers felt was kind of ridiculous, and I think even some liberal bloggers agreed. Some of the arguments that were made that from Josh Marshall, arguing that the ad was similar to the Harold Ford ad in the 04 or 06 cycle, where, I see we put a young, attractive white woman next to a black man. This is clearly a racist ad, was what Marshall was saying. Rick Perlstein, I think, went even further, comparing the ad to The Triumph of the Will by Leni Riefenstahl, as if the Republicans were trying to turn Obama into Hitler, something like that. The arguments didn't make a lot of sense. I want to give credit to Oliver Willis, who is a Media Matters employee, but on his personal blog, oliverwillis.com, whether it matters that Oliver Willis is African-American himself, I'm not really sure, but what he said was that, come on, all right, this is a little bit too far. I don't think the ad was racist. The Hitler thing is definitely taking it too far. So the McCain campaign basically, I think, was able to create a little bit of a wedge between Obama and his online supporters, sent a few of them off the deep end. Obama couldn't really talk about that or acknowledge that. So I think that was something that was fairly impressive to, to the right blogosphere about that. Go ahead.
I need to stand up for my Campaign for America's Future brother, Rick Perlstein.
Sure, sure.
Because he was writing about this on our blog at ourfuture.org. And he actually extrapolates into a larger series of FBN politics, and I won't say what the acronym stands for on here. But, he just wrote Nixon Land, which was a deep analysis of how Nixon practiced polarizing politics back then, the kind of tactics that were used. And obviously a lot of these things are very a lot of the analysis is inherently subjective. But one thing he actually wrote in a post today, which I thought was notable, a commenter of his who said that he had worked for the gubernatorial campaign of Doug Wilder, who was the first African-American governor elected post-Reconstruction, said that the way that Doug Wilder handled that campaign is that when the race baiting happens, you don't take the bait. And in saying that putting aside whether or not these
guys
were
race baiting, I think that definitely needs to be discussed. Do you think, Bill Scherer, that there was race baiting in that ad?
Well, in following the advice of this commentary, putting aside whether these things were actually racist or not, what Rick himself took from the commenter is, even if you do think this is racist, there's limited utility in many cases in calling it out and then generating a big discussion about it because some of these things are inherently subjective, because you can't always definitively prove what is going on. You tend to get bogged down in this polarizing muck and you don't get anywhere. And clearly that's not the way Barack Obama has generally run his campaign. He very much wants to not be the candidate of racial grievance.
Absolutely, yeah.
So I will leave it there.
Okay. Well, let me talk real briefly about, you know, what the rightosphere thinks about this. I'll tell you what, the rightosphere has always been skeptical of Obama, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so in these in the poll numbers where they find that, you know, Obama is running, you know, a few points ahead of McCain on average, which is certainly further back than, it's further back than Dukakis was ahead of Bush at this point in 88. And this is tend to be a pattern that Democrats have bigger leads and then go on to lose. So I don't know if you can actually make any predictions out of this. Maybe that's a good thing for him. Maybe he's not overperforming too soon. Maybe he's not peaking too soon as Democrats had. But, you know, Republican bloggers tend to think that, you know, that Obama is not always cracked up to be. And they think that maybe the public sees that.
I find that's a strange phenomenon. I see it in conservative blogs. I see it in the McCain campaign. There's a general disrespect. There's a general sense that, you know, this guy's an empty suit, and it will eventually become obvious to everybody if we, you know, push that argument out there a little bit with the celebrity type stuff, and he'll be exposed as the pretender that he is. And that just strikes me. I feel every time, you know, that's what the Clinton campaign in a sense tried to do. Obviously not celebrity stuff, but there was a sense that that he wasn't ready to lead, and he's too green, he's too new. And I just don't. When you see Obama in the hot seat, he clears that bar every time. So it just strikes me.
I don't know.
As
he's had some difficult. I remember during the primaries, he had some debates where he, you know, stumbled a little bit.
You can say that every single candidate in a YouTube era, when every utterance you say is ridiculously micro-tracked. You know, everybody's exhausted, everybody's overworked. There's always going to be minor slip-ups.
Yeah, but he's not been perfect. I mean, he certainly has his, as is McCain, Obama has made his share of gaffes and said his share of silly things over the past.
The bar on what a gaffe is has been ridiculously lowered in this process. You know, a minor verbal slip is not a gaffe.
I wish I'd compare to the real good one, because I know there are a few, but I know there are a few good ones about McCain, too. So I don't really care to get too far into the weeds on who's committing bigger gaffes. I think we tried that one a few months ago.
I mean, it would have been a much bigger deal, of course, if Obama was on his foreign trip and said something completely impolitic while standing next to Prime Minister Olmert or standing next to Maliki. That when this guy's on the world stage, he can't cut it. That would have been a huge problem. And if you'd set that bar to say, this guy can't handle being president, then you see him not handling being president, then yes, that would be terribly damaging. But that never happens. So I don't understand why you keep pounding, why I mean, not just you personally, of course, but why conservative blogosphere is, think that this argument has enough juice in it to get Obama below 50% permanently and McCain above 50% for once?
That is a good question. I mean, can that actually carry through the election? I don't know. Certainly, I think, you know, they're looking for that there's a commander-in-chief test. Does Obama pass that? I know David Brooks was arguing, not about the commander-in-chief test, but about whether people knew who he was. And, you know, certainly a candidate can introduce themselves over the period of time. I think that the commander-in-chief test may be harder. I don't know. I mean, I don't have a real clear sense of it. I find the subject fascinating, too, but I couldn't tell you exactly where it's going. You know, and I think one thing that will be interesting to see over the coming months is, and this is why I don't take polls too seriously now, is because people who are in these polls, people who currently call themselves likely voters, are the people who are following the news much more frequently, and yet turnout has been up over the past few years, and I think the people who will be turning out in the fall still haven't tuned in yet, maybe won't even tune in exactly around Labor Day either. You have two classes of people in this country. You have those that follow politics closely, and you have those that don't follow it very much at all. And thanks to blogs and thanks to the internet in general, the people who are able to follow, people who are interested in following politics are following it very intensely right now, and they're watching Blogging Heads probably, thinking through a lot of the same questions that we are. I'm much more fascinated by the people who are outside of the little bubble that I honestly occupy here inside the Beltway. How about the people, you know, who, you know, they're not following politics too closely, even though they're probably still going to vote. They, thanks to the internet, thanks to blogs, they also don't have to, you know, follow the news too closely. They can read gossip blogs. They can read Perez Hilton. And they can get as much sports as they can get piped into their house over broadband. And, you know, I want to see where this is at in about 2 months' time. What are they going to think of Obama? Is Obama at a disadvantage because he still has to introduce himself to them and they won't be paying attention until too late?
There'll be a period of polling, I think, after both conventions and both VP picks in mid-September. Yeah. You can see if that shakes out some of those undecideds. There'll be a period, I think, after the debates finish in mid-October that might shake out some more. And then you really have a much better sense of where the race is at. But it would seem that's why, you know, no one breaks 50 consistently. Obama generally upper 40s, McCain lower 40s, about 10 to 15% undecided. That's probably going to stay that way, you know, barring, you know, unexpected, earth-shattering external event. That's not a crazy state of affairs.
And, of course, after the conventions is when we will finally know who the candidates have chosen as their VPs. And maybe as a way of transition, let me tell you, I've been fascinated over the past week watching as the lefty blogosphere has recoiled in horror at the notion that Virginia Governor Tim Kaine could possibly be the Obama's pick for VP.
There's a split there, I would say. Not on Kaine specifically, but a split in terms of how much import to put on the VP pick.
Sure.
You had, if I can find my examples here quickly, you had, you know, Matt Stoller and Chris Bowers at Open Left definitely expressing some concern over either Tim Kaine or Evan Bayh. Matt called Bayh you know, a Democratic Dan Quayle. where did I put that? I'll find it. And you had other folks going at Tim Kaine. You know, Stoller had talked about how the Virginia blog Raising Kaine stopped calling itself Raising Kaine when they didn't think Tim Kaine was governing as progressive enough as he campaigned.
It's of course still at RaisingKaine.com. But they only go by RK on the website now.
And also you have Dylan Matthews over at Tapped, who wrote a more substantive post on Bayh. Bayh is well to the right of both Obama and the party at large. He not only voted to authorize the invasion of Iraq in 02, he was an honorary co-chairman of the Committee to Liberate Iraq, along with Lieberman and McCain. If those associates weren't bad enough, the group's members included Bill Kristol, James Woolsey, and McCain foreign policy guru Randy Schoenemann. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. Even in this Congress, Bayh voted for the relatively weak Levin Amendment, calling for redeployment, but against the more hard-hitting Feingold Amendment, with both which Obama and Clinton supported. 50% NARAL rating, voted for the flag-burning amendment and the bankruptcy reform, undecided on the school prayer amendment, supports McCain's proposal to boot Russia from the G8, and he supported the Kyle Lieberman Amendment that Obama made a key part of its critique on Clinton. If Obama wants to alienate progressives while reinforcing the media narratives that he's flip-flopping and moving to the center, then Bayh is a good pick. If he wants to win and work towards liberal policy goals while in office, I suggest he look elsewhere. That's Dylan Matthews at Tapped. But having said all that, you had a Booman Tribune say, needless to say, the selection of Bayh would be met by stony silence at best within the progressive movement. May would be outraged and consider it a betrayal of trust. For my part, I'd be bitterly disappointed, but I wouldn't read it as anything more or less than a strategic calculation. And Atreus over at Eschaton concurred with that. As with the rest of the campaign, Obama's VP choice isn't going to be designed to please me. Maybe I'll be pleasantly surprised, but I just don't think it's all that important. As Boom Man says, it's mostly a strategic choice. I'll be pissed if it ends up being bad strategy, but I don't really claim to have deep insight about who would be the best strategic choice. So even within the liberal blogosphere, you don't have a consensus whether the VP pick says something about the ideological direction that Obama would actually take as president.
Maybe what I should have said about Kaine in the first place was that among the bloggers who know him best, say Lowell Feld at Raising Kaine, or my coworker Ben Tribbett, better known as Not Larry Sabato, Ben was saying something the other day about how, you know, he'll go jump off a cliff if Kane is the nominee.
Well, always your home critics are always the worst.
True enough. And yeah, I mean, I'm actually recording from Arlington, Virginia. I said Washington, but I fibbed slightly because I'm about
Washington
maybe
metro
100
area.
Yards from the Potomac.
But do the Virginia bloggers, either on the left or the right, think that you may not like Kane personally, you might not think he is good enough on actual issues, but yeah. Do they think that he would not help put Virginia in the Obama column?
I think that, you know, they would see it as a sign that Obama is not going to govern as a progressive. If they choose somebody like Kane, who has let down progressives on really a pretty impressive list of issues, that certainly would be a bad sign. Also, they do have Virginia has one of the more influential and widely read blogospheres, and I mean state blogospheres is influencing national blogs. Matt Stoller quoted extensively from somebody raising Kane who's not Lowell, you know, going through the list. You know, so basically national bloggers will look to the people who know that person best. And, you know, I think Obama certainly can afford to annoy progressive bloggers. And he certainly
has.
Well, and he has, right, to a large degree.
and he's still leading.
But I don't – oh,
and
yeah.
And he still
oh,
higher
yeah.
enthusiasm from his base than McCain has from his.
I think it's a lot – but can he afford to really alienate them? I think that would alienate a big chunk of them. Obviously, I think H. Rios and Booman have a little more mature look on that. I don't mean to. I know Lowell and Ben both, so I don't mean to call them immature. But I think that there is some distance, as you put it. They're able to put some distance and be a little more philosophical about it.
Now, is there the same intensity being looked at McCain's VP pick from conservative bloggers?
There's totally not. Nothing even the like it.
That's a little surprising because there's been a lot of a lot of consternation with McCain and the conservative movement for so long. Why isn't this being translated to the VP pick?
I think maybe because for McCain, he's already their fourth pick. They don't hold them up to any ideals that I think the progressives hold Obama to. You know, there are a lot of names kicking, and I think when I was doing research earlier today, before this, I was going through Technorati looking for Veep Talk, and it was really going 10-1, lefty blogs as opposed to righty blogs talking about it. You know,
so
I'm
always surprised. I have few conservative members of my extended family, but I do have a couple.
Mm-hmm.
And one is intently looking at that pick. She is dying for it to be Bobby Jindal. Someone else that is a true conservative because she is really having a hard time stomaching a vote for McCain and she wants that kind of reassurance.
So if she knows Jindal, she must be fairly well plugged in because I don't think Jindal's a national figure just yet. She must be one of the influentials or Citizen 2.0 or polyfluentials. There are all these names.
I think she's a regular conservative talk radio listener.
There you go. Okay, sure. I would probably describe my father, too, who we've discussed, and his joining of Drill Here, Drill Now in a previous edition. I think if it's Romney, there will be a lot of grumbling about that. Romney was never terribly popular in the wider conservative blogosphere. The Romney bloggers are, to a large extent, still around, and they'll certainly be thrilled about it. I think Romney may be the most plausible. I heard a rumor about 2 weeks ago that Romney was going to be picked last Friday. And at that point, I was like thinking, all right, well, so it's going to be Romney. And then it didn't happen, even though the rumors sounded credible enough when it was forwarded to me. But, you know, they say, hey, never trust email forwards, even if they come from people you think might know.
Now, I heard on MSNBC over the last couple of days that the campaign people were telling reporters it will be a surprise. Now, if it's going to be a surprise, I would think that would rule out Romney and Pawlenty because those are the two that get talked about the most.
Those are definitely the top two guesses. And I think the conservative blogosphere would be happier with Pawlenty. He's a much more down-the-line conservative.
Really?
Or at least he doesn't have as many problems, with the right as
I actually remember seeing Pawlenty. I saw Pawlenty speak at CPAC.
Uh-huh.
Where he gave a speech how we can't be Wall Street Republicans, we have to be Sam's Club Republicans. We can't be Country Club Republicans, but Sam's Club Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And there was dead silence in that room. They did not care for his speech at all.
To some extent, this may be an effect of the fact that people don't know Pawlenty quite as well. But where I had not heard anybody in from the Minnesota blogosphere actually contains some very large blogs on the right, Powerline, Captain Ed, who now blogs for HotAir.com, is also from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and I'm sure Powerline probably has some criticisms to make, but they're nothing that are making their way around the blogosphere, and I don't know exactly what they've said about them, so I want to be clear about that. Jindal is definitely a name who's tossed around a lot, but I think that the conservative blogosphere is pretty smart about this. They don't really want Jindal to be on the ticket. They think that being on the McCain ticket, especially if McCain loses, which is probably what they think is going to have happen, will not necessarily be good for Jindal. Also, he's been in office for a very short period of time. Let him be a governor for a few years, and then he'll be ready to run in 12 or 16.
You feel very happy for him to keynote, I assume.
Yeah, in fact, there's a move. It's not clear that he's going to get a keynote a speech at the convention, and so there is Patrick Ruffini, once again, is starting up a movement to get a Facebook campaign and blog campaign to make sure that Jindal gets speaking time during prime time. And I think somebody like Ruffini will be heard by convention organizers. I mean, I know that he knows people there, and so maybe they aren't the ones that make the decisions, but certainly, they're gonna, if they don't put Jindal on during prime time, you're going to see a lot of consternation about that.
Now, you've seen some speculation about out-of-the-box picks for McCain, like mm-hmm. Fred Smith, who's the CEO of Federal Express, or probably
Fiorina. I've not really seen that, honestly. I saw the Democrats included him. The DNC put up a website the other day called thenextcheney.com, which is one of the sillier, less effective microsites that I've seen, basically trying to tie all the potential VP picks to Cheney in ways that were all different and mostly implausible or very, very tenuous. And they had him on there, and that was the first time I'd seen Fred Smith.
It was floated
really
by The Page, Mark Halperin's The Page.
Okay.
I think that's where it was kicked around other places before, but more recently there was a Mark Halperin post that said there's a portion of McCain's team that mm-hmm. believes he needs a pick that has business experience, that has military mm-hmm. experience, that did not run for elective office before and has no connection to George Bush, and that essentially fit the bill for Fred Smith and, to a lesser extent, Carly Fiorina, who has all that but the military experience, but has...
And she certainly has. She's been vetted in the media, you could say, and, she didn't bomb.
I think there's more on her that hasn't been said about her yet.
Say that again?
There's more on her that could be said that hasn't been said yet.
Oh, that sounds like a... Sounds like a threat.
I don't mean to insinuate anything tawdry, but for example,
well, she had when she left HP, there was obviously trouble. I forget the exact nature of the scandal. It had to do with spying on employees, I believe. Definitely not good.
I mean, that's out there, but it hasn't been recycled recently in her mm-hmm. in her media boomlet.
Yeah, I mean she's a plausible, very plausible cabinet pick. That she can withstand the scrutiny from HP for that, but for the VP slot, it's too much for that. But speaking of out of the box candidates and women, the one that I think is the most fun is Sarah Palin, a very popular governor of Alaska, and quite a good looking woman as well. There are people that definitely want her to be VP, who are active on Facebook, who are active. There's, I think, palinforvp.blogspot.com. I think she's very, very unlikely to be the pick. But she has a lot to recommend her. She's putting Democrats in jail, which is, which is good. Sean Parnell, her lieutenant governor, is opposing Don Young, the probably going to be indicted any day now, corrupt Republican congressman from Alaska. She's rooting out corruption in her own party. She is, she's a fairly tough governor. I don't know exactly how conservative she is, but she's tough, and that always counts for something. And Did I mention she was good looking?
So you see all activity for her. Are conservative bloggers doing the same for these Fred Smith Caulifiorina possibilities? Are they saying, wow, that is just absolutely crazy. I can't believe that's being seriously considered. Is there any reaction there?
About Palin, you mean?
About Fiorina and Smith.
Well, Fiorina has been, you know, talked about a lot. And, you know, I think it's not totally crazy, but nobody really expects it. Fred Smith, maybe you have more estimation for Halperin's insight into conservative minds.
I think it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's nuts. I don't know that much about him. I know, you know, he's the head of FedEx. He appears, I think, briefly in the Michael Lewis book, The Blind Side, which is sort of he does for football what he did for baseball with Moneyball, kind of. I don't know that much about him. I don't think it's very likely, for sure. You know, Eric Cantor is another name been floated, but Eric Cantor is not terribly well-liked by conservative bloggers. I think there's a sense that he's a young guy who has been young, so a rising star, that he was, you know, he had a good, you know, patina to him a few years ago. But how long can you be a rising star is one question. He's also has been aligned with the anti-reform previous leadership and some of the current leadership in the Republican House Caucus, so I think Cantor is a possibility, but he wouldn't excite anybody if he was the pick.
Really,
I think so. I'll tell you what the best theory that I've heard so far, and this comes from a friend of mine named Eric Pfeiffer, who writes for CQ.com. The Ground Game is the name of the blog, and now his theory is that McCain already knows that he's going to lose. And so McCain, who detests Mitt Romney, is going to pick Romney, put him on the ticket. So when McCain loses, as you know, he knows that he's going to, he's going to take down Mitt Romney's political career with him. A murder-suicide, if you will. And while I'm not sure that really adds up, I think it's funny. That's the only reason I shared it, really.
I should ask, since we're doing all this musing on the conservative side, I do think I have seen in the liberal blogosphere more support than I might have expected for Governor Sebelius, Kathleen Sebelius of Kansas. Mm-hmm. There's a sense among some bloggers that she positions herself in a centrist way in a red state, but she's still governed with more liberal progressive principles successfully and won re-election doing it. So there seems to be more goodwill there for her than of all the so-called shortlist picks by Kane, Biden. I'm sorry?
So you think she is plausible, Sebelius?
She's certainly plausible. I mean, yeah. I think she's definitely on, where the shortlist is. I think she's been on some state of the shortlist at some time, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But who knows what the actual shortlist is or what criteria Obama's actually using.
Right.
And he's certainly not going to pick someone based on what bloggers want. I think that's pretty well established that he's not looking to the blogosphere for strategic advice or anyone else in the Democratic chattering class. But I think of all the shortlist picks that have been mentioned, Sebelius would be the one that would probably get the most outward support from liberal bloggers.
Okay. One that always seemed interesting to me was, Janet Napolitano. Maybe I even mentioned this the last time I was here. You know, Napolitano, she's also from Arizona. She's the governor. She's quite popular.
McCain is pulling his little soft in Arizona.
Right. That's why it would be, you know, kind of almost a mean trick on Obama's part to choose Napolitano, who's got a pretty good record. I think it's fairly moderate, but wouldn't offend progressives and possibly steal away Arizona from McCain. That would also be funny. But also unlikely to happen, and I'm not sure it quite adds up, but again, the Veep stakes, you know, we've talked about it for several minutes. I'll tell you, Veep stakes, kind of pointless, right? We have no clue whatsoever.
I think more so than usual. You know, I felt with Kerry, I felt I had a fairly good sense of what kind of criteria he was going to bring to this. It'd be sort of conventional wisdom criteria. And with Obama, one, I think no one really knows what criteria he's using. And two, I think he's got a lot deeper bench to work with. So there isn't as small a pool of people that you have to focus on. So it's much harder to game out. And as I think is often said, very little actual impact on what's going to happen on election day.
And certainly nobody's talking about John Edwards for VP as of the past 2 weeks or so.
On that note, why don't
on
we
that
call
note,
this a day?
It has been good talking to you, Bill.
Good talking to you, too.
All right. This has been fun. Let's do it again soon.
Excellent. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.